So tell me, what kind of a leader do we need now? I mean, that is the question of the hour, isn't it? And I think that's really the question that's at the heart of much of the political debate that's going on around us. I mean, in case you hadn't noticed, we're in the final stretch of this coming election. And then, of course, it kind of feels like the world is falling apart. Pandemic, social unrest, wildfires, all this smoke. And so we've got all these campaign ads coming in hot and heavy right now, trying to connect with our emotions, with our fears, our hopes, our anxieties, our frustrations. I mean, these ads are just everywhere, as I'm sure you've noticed, on the TV, on our social media feeds, out on people's lawns. Vote for this guy. He's the guy that we really need to lead us right now. What kind of a leader do we need? I mean, it turns out that this isn't just the question of the hour. I think if we could all just take a breath and step back for a moment, I think that we could see that this is always one of the most important questions for us. What kind of leader do we need? You know, in the realm of American politics, sometimes I hear people lament that we need more leaders like their political heroes, the John Kennedys or the Ronald Reagans, leaders who got us through the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War, leaders who got us to the moon and to a point of economic greatness. You know, I would guess that people from every nation can think back with fondness to certain leaders. Leaders that they wish could return and lead them once again. Leaders that they think that could do better than those who are presently leading. Leaders that they think would be able to lead them back to greatness once again. Well, the descendants of Abraham, the Israelites, the Jews, they certainly felt this way. Turns out they had reason to. Today we're going to find out why. Today is also going to be the last message in our Emmaus Road series, at least for now. This series has been based on something really significant that Jesus did on the day that he rose from the dead, in addition to rising from the dead, of course. See, on that day, Jesus joined two of his disciples as they walked together on the road to Emmaus. And as they traveled together, Jesus showed them how all of their scriptures, our Old Testament, pointed to him, the long-promised Messiah, even though their text, this text, had been written centuries before he showed up. And these disciples describe this experience of seeing their scriptures in this new and deeper way as like having their hearts burning within them. And my hope and prayer is that our experience has been similar to that. See, we've looked at Adam and Eve, the Tower of Babel, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Joseph, most recently Moses. And even as we have seen how God has instructed and blessed and guided and challenged and protected and rescued his people, we have also seen how each of these people and their circumstances can point us to Jesus. And there is a reason for this. It is because God has always had this great unstoppable plan to rescue and to redeem a people for himself. He started with Abraham and all of his descendants, the Jews, but his plan was ultimately for the whole world. And it's fulfilled in Jesus, in his life, in his death, and in his return to life. This is very clear from the Gospels and the rest of the New Testament. But see, what we have been learning is that when we know what to look for, even these earliest parts of our Bible can point us to Jesus. And that is because Jesus is the greater Adam. He is the true Abraham. He is the better Isaac. He's the greater Jacob. He's the truer Joseph. And as we've seen most recently, the better Moses. And we're going to see that again this morning. If you got a Bible with you, I invite you to open with me to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy 18. Now, the setting for the book of Deuteronomy is just outside the land of Canaan, the promised land. This is the land that God had promised to Abraham all the way back in Genesis chapter 12. This promise was renewed to Isaac, and then Jacob, when he moved his family to Egypt to escape the terrible famine, as well as to be close to Joseph, God also promised to Jacob that one day his descendants would return to this land. And so now, centuries later, and numbering thousands upon thousands, these descendants now are standing on the doorstep of the promised land. But before they enter, Moses takes the time to remind them of how they got there and what kind of people God expects them to be. And so the name Deuteronomy, it means second law. This is a second retelling of the laws that they received from God, from Yahweh, Yahweh being the personal name of God. This is a second telling or a retelling of the laws that they received from Yahweh when they were at Mount Sinai. It's a review of the many commandments and stipulations and guidelines that God expected of his specially chosen and redeemed people as they prepared to enter this land that he had promised to them. And then it is among this review of all that God expects of them that Moses says something really important to them. I guess all of it was important, but this thing in particular. Moses tells them to be on the lookout for another leader, another prophet who will lead them like he has. So this is Moses speaking here. Deuteronomy 18, starting in verse 14. Here's what Moses says. The nations that you will dispossess listen to those who practice sorcery or divination. But as for you, the Lord, and remember when it says Lord there in all capital letters, that's the personal name of God. It's Yahweh. Yahweh, your God, has not permitted you to do so. Yahweh, your God, will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him. A few things to notice here. The first is that the Israelites are not to practice sorcery or divination like the nations around them. See, these were means by which other nations sought to communicate with their gods. This is not how the Israelites are to communicate with their God, Yahweh. Instead, Yahweh tells them that he's going to speak to them directly, primarily through prophets like Moses. Second, he tells them that they are to be on the lookout for a very specific prophet, another prophet leader who, like Moses, is going to be raised up by God, a prophet leader that they will need to listen to. Now, this is no small thing that Moses is saying here. See, Moses has been a once in a generation, once in a lifetime, dare I even say a once in a millennia type leader for the Israelites. I mean, let me remind you. He was their leader. He was the leader commissioned by Yahweh at the burning bush and sent to the court of Pharaoh to demand the Israelites be released from slavery. He was Yahweh's agent and spokesman as Pharaoh stubbornly refused to listen, even as he had his nation systematically ruined before him. He was the leader who led them to the banks of the Red Sea. And when Pharaoh and his army charged after them to capture them and to bring them back to Egypt, he was the one who raised his staff and led them across as Yahweh split the waters before them. He was the leader who led them to Mount Sinai. He was the one who climbed the mountain to meet with God and receive the Ten Commandments. He directed them as they built the tabernacle. He was the leader when Yahweh provided the Israelites with manna and quail to eat all through their journey through the wilderness. He He was the leader who interceded on their behalf when their faith faltered and they refused to enter the promised land the first time. See, about a year after leaving Egypt, the Israelites first approached the borders of the promised land. And each of the 12 tribes sent a representative to spy out the land. And for 40 days, these spies surveyed this territory that Yahweh had promised to them, and they found it to be bountiful and fertile, but also inhabited by mighty people who lived in fortified cities. Now, two of these spies, Joshua and Caleb, they trusted that God would keep his promise to them and give them this land. But the other 10 spies lost their nerve and actually convinced the people to turn against Moses. They even discussed picking a new leader who could actually bring them back to Egypt. Yahweh was very angry with the people for refusing to trust that he would in fact keep his promise to them. I mean, especially in light of all that he had already done so far to rescue them. And Moses, even while being betrayed by his own people, he still interceded with Yahweh on their behalf. And Yahweh relented, but because of their faithlessness, decreed that none of that generation would ever enter the promised land. Now their children would, but not until they spent another 40 years wandering in the wilderness until everyone from that generation, except for Caleb and Joshua, had died. And Moses was the leader who kept them together for those 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And it was never easy. And the people frequently complained and they questioned his leadership. But through it all, they never lacked water or food or the leadership that they needed. See, Moses was a once in a generation, once in a lifetime, once in a millennia type leader for the Israelites. And here in Deuteronomy 18, as they are on the verge of finally entering the promised land, Moses is telling them to be on the lookout for another prophet leader like him that Yahweh is going to raise up on their behalf. But why? Why now? Why is Moses telling them this now? It's because he will not be entering the promised land with them. See, even he, their great prophet leader, faltered in the wilderness. At Meribah, one of the places where the people had complained about not having water, Moses had failed to faithfully represent Yahweh to the people. Instead, he allowed his anger to get the best of him. And for this, Yahweh still allowed Moses to see the promised land, but not to enter it. And now that the 40 years of wilderness wanderings had come to an end, now that they stood on the edge of the promised land, Moses' tenure of leadership, of leading the Israelites, was now coming to an end. And so they must have wondered, what kind of leader do we need now? Well, Moses goes on and he tells them that as they enter this promised land, Yahweh is going to go before them, and Joshua will lead them. Joshua, the warrior who had led their fighting men, Joshua, the spy who had trusted Yahweh, would keep his promises to them, that he would settle them in the promised land. If you want to follow along, jump down to chapter 31. We're moving quick. Deuteronomy 31. Verse 1 says, "Then Moses went out and spoke these words to all Israel. I am now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you. And Yahweh has said to me, 'You shall not cross the Jordan. Yahweh, your God himself, will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you will take possession of their land. Joshua also will cross over ahead of you, as Yahweh has said. And Yahweh will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the king of the Amorites, whom he destroyed along with their land. Yahweh will deliver them to you, and you must do to them what I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for Yahweh your God goes with you, and he will never leave you nor forsake you. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, "Be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors to give to them, and you must divide it among them as their inheritance. Yahweh himself goes before you, and he will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged." So at this point, Moses continues on, and he actually gives them some final words of warning as well as some instructions to the people. And then Moses climbs Mount Nebo, from which he will be able to look out over the Promised Land, this land that Yahweh had promised to Abraham all those years before. Jump down to chapter 34, verse 1. Then Moses climbed Mount Nebo from the plains of Moab to the top of Pisgah across from Jericho. And there Yahweh showed him the whole land, from Gilead to Dan, all of Naphtali, the territory of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the Mediterranean Sea, the Negev and the whole region from the valley of Jericho, the city of palms, as far as Zoar. Then Yahweh said to him, "This is the land that I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when I said, 'I will give it to your descendants.' And I have let you see it with your eyes, but you will not cross over into it." And Moses, the servant of Yahweh, died there in Moab, as Yahweh had said. He buried him in Moab, in the valley opposite Beth Peor. But to this day, no one knows where his grave is. Moses was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyes were not weak, nor his strength gone. The Israelites grieved for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days until the time of weeping and mourning was over. Now Joshua, son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands on him. And so the Israelites listened to him and did what Yahweh had commanded Moses. And so now it would seem that the Israelites had found this new leader prophet that Moses had told them about. Someone that Yahweh had raised up for them, someone who would lead them, someone who would hear from Yahweh and then speak his words to them. I mean, from all appearances, Joshua is the guy. He's the leader that Yahweh has promised to them. He's the leader that they need. And Joshua does lead them well and successfully into the Promised Land. And so at least in some sense, he does fulfill Moses' words from Deuteronomy 18. In fact, we might conclude that Joshua is exactly who is described in Deuteronomy 18, were it not for one thing. The closing words of Deuteronomy 34. Look at verse 10 in Deuteronomy 34. "Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom Yahweh knew face to face, who did all those signs and wonders that Yahweh sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his officials and to his whole land. No one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all of Israel." Now, to fully appreciate what it says here, we need to think about who wrote these words and when they were written. Now, here at DFBC, we talk about each book of the Bible as having two authors, the big A author, that's God, who is the one who inspires the text, And then we also talk about having a small a author. That's the human author who actually wrote the text. And so what that means is that what we end up with in our Bibles are all the words and exactly the words that God wants us to have, but they're mediated to us through human authors, each with their own style and vocabulary. I mean, the Bible is truly an amazing book. Now, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis through Deuteronomy, these are attributed to Moses. He is the source of at least most of the material that makes up these first five books. However, this last chapter, it would seem, was added by someone else after Moses' death, since it records Moses' death. I mean, someone also inspired by God to do so, but somebody other than Moses. Now, if it was Joshua, then for him to say, since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses. If it was Joshua who said that, then, I mean, frankly, he really isn't saying all that much, since he lived right after Moses. I mean, the only thing he's really making clear is that he's not the guy that Moses was talking about. But if, in fact, these final words here were written much later, perhaps as late as after the exile, which would mean hundreds and hundreds of years later, which I actually think is likely, then these words are really saying something. See, what it means is that even after the Israelites had settled into the promised land, even after they had had kings like David and Solomon, even after they had lost the land and gone into exile, even after they had returned from exile and they'd had a chance to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple, they were still waiting and looking for another prophet leader like Moses. It means that the promise of Deuteronomy 18 was still unfulfilled. They were still waiting, looking, longing for another prophet leader like Moses, that once in a generation, once in a lifetime, once in a millennia type leader that they knew they needed. There's so much more I could say, but time doesn't permit it. But let me say this. This is why in the New Testament, when John the Baptist bursts onto the scene, the religious leaders from Jerusalem, they come out to him at the Jordan River and they ask him if he might be the prophet. He tells them no. John the Baptist was a prophet, but he was not the prophet like Moses. This is why the crowds wondered the same thing about Jesus after he fed the 5,000 or after he taught powerfully in Jerusalem. They said to him, surely this is the prophet who has come into the world. Later on they say, surely this man is that prophet. What these crowds wondered about, Peter actually affirms after Pentecost. Speaking of the ascension, when Jesus returned to heaven, Peter said, heaven must receive Jesus until the time comes for God to restore everything, as he promised long ago through his holy prophets. For Moses said, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your own people. You must listen to everything he tells you. Peter is saying, Jesus is that prophet. See, the promise of Deuteronomy 18 of a future prophet leader like Moses finds its greatest and ultimate fulfillment in Jesus. Jesus is the prophet like Moses, and he is the true and greater prophet than Moses. See, Moses and Jesus were both commissioned by Yahweh to set his people free. Moses led them out of slavery in Egypt. But it's Jesus who leads us out of our slavery to sin, death, and brokenness. Moses and Jesus both inaugurated life-changing covenantal relationships between God and the people. Moses inaugurated the old covenant at Mount Sinai, but it's Jesus who inaugurates our new and better covenant with God at Calvary. Moses and Jesus both spoke the words of God to his people. Moses spoke the words that God gave to him. But Jesus spoke as God and became the God who lived amongst us. Moses and Jesus both provided God's people with the once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-millennia-type leadership that they needed. Moses led them out of Egypt through the wilderness into their new home, the Promised Land. But it is Jesus who leads us out of our sin and death through life in this beautiful but broken world and one day to our forever home in the new heaven and the new earth. Here's the point of all of this. This whole book, from the very beginning to the very end, all points us to Jesus. The Old Testament predicts him. The Gospels reveal him. The New Testament explains him. And the book of Revelation describes his future return. From the very beginning, Jesus is at the center of God's great unstoppable plan to rescue and redeem our beautiful but broken world. And so it really is not just a cliche to say that Jesus is the answer to what we need the most. And so let me tie this into our need for leadership today. My friends, there is only one once in a generation, once in a lifetime, once in a millennia type leader. And he's not a Republican. And he's not a Democrat. And my friends, no matter who is in the White House now or who is going to be in the White House next, our leader for today and our hope for tomorrow is not found in who sits at the Resolute desk at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Our leader for today and our hope for tomorrow sits on the throne in heaven. And his name is Jesus. And he is the greater Adam. He is the truer Abraham. He is the better Isaac. He is the greater Jacob. He is the truer Joseph. He is the prophet leader even better than Moses. He is the leader that we need. And so let's make sure that he is the leader that we are following. Let me pray. Father, I praise you for being bigger and better than all of the challenges and the difficulties and the trials that we face in this life, and Father, that in particular that we are facing right now, between the pandemic and the social unrest and the upcoming elections and these fires and even more. Thank you for always being present with us as we are in the midst of these things. And Jesus, we praise you for being our once in a generation, once in a lifetime, once in eternity type leader that we truly need most. Holy Spirit, teach us to follow our true rescuer King well. so that our words and our actions, so that our statements and our responses, so that our attitudes and our motivations reflect the truth and the love and the grace and the humility that we see in our King Jesus. And it's in His name we pray this. Amen. I invite you to stand with me for the blessing. And once I finish the blessing, you guys are dismissed. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. You are dismissed.